It is Saturday, June 28th, 2008, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, the week in geek news, and the second half, your questions and comments about technology.
The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. This is Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks. Miles Elam, student programmer and political junkie.
Good morning.
Ben Jaffe, slacker and media dude.
Hey.
Ryder Brooks, support engineer at Sun Microsystems.
Good morning, Lyle.
And from Southern California, Alex Leas, application security analyst for Fidelity National Financial.
Good morning, Lyle.
Alex, it's nice to have you actually in the room and not just on the chat supporting us. So thank you very much for coming up. I know you didn't do it for Geek Speak. I know you did it for Miles, who is old now today. Actually, a few days ago. Happy birthday, Miles.
Thank you.
Before we go into taking calls in the second half, let's do geek news as we do every week. And Mr. Elam, I will start with you.
You have a particular...
Ice, Mars.
Ice and Mars. Well, turns out there is, in fact, ice on Mars.
Okay, done. Next.
Didn't
we already know there was ice on Mars? We could, see it? The caps are all white?
We weren't quite sure what it was, because at the poles it may also just be frozen CO2. Dry ice, basically.
Alex, what you said, when I said we knew about ice, we knew...
Well, we saw it. We didn't have a whole lot of evidence beyond visual.
So it was kind of circumstantial.
Yeah.
All right, so how do we know?
So the recent Phoenix lander on Mars, it dropped its robotic arm on the on the soil, raised it up again, and there was something there. They're like, huh, that looks kind of like ice. And over time, it sublimated away because of the low atmosphere. Like, it just goes straight from a solid form to a gaseous form.
Right.
So you don't have a liquid form ready to go. And so some people have said, well, what about dry ice? Is that dry ice? But it turns out that the Phoenix landing site is too high a temperature, negative 70 degrees Fahrenheit, whereas dry ice requires temperatures to be lower than 109 degrees Fahrenheit.
So
another reason why you don't want to hold dry ice in your bare hand.
Right. So what you're saying is that we don't know of any other thing that it could be besides water ice.
Correct. That's the working model.
Right. And now, the thing that's interesting is that it's sublimating away when it touches the atmosphere. What does that actually mean? Like, what the picture that you showed me, the animated
GIF. Right, it's going directly from a solid form to a gaseous form.
And why is it doing that? I mean, if it's so low in temperature, why would it turn into gas?
It's because the pressure is not high enough. One of the reasons that you would have liquid water is you need to have a certain – we have atmospheric pressure here with 14 pounds per square inch. But if you were to release water into space, the water is just going to dissipate. And also become a gas.
That's when they say it boils away.
Right.
Okay.
And so if you have something that's really cold that can make ice, such as when it's under the soil where it has some pressure there, then it's going to be in a solid form. But once it's released to the atmosphere, the pressure is released, there's no state of liquid for that water ice or for that water. It's just going to go straight from that solid form. And that transition to the water doesn't really happen. It's an immediate boil, I guess is the best way to describe it.
Okay, that makes sense. I mean, the idea of a solid and of a liquid is that the molecules don't free float. They actually kind of bond together. In a liquid, they bond loosely and keep on making new bonds. In a solid, they hold on to their neighbor pretty well.
Right. And
so when
there's
not enough atmosphere, the molecules just fall off and fly out into the atmosphere of Mars, I think, still. I don't think they'll lose the oxygen. I think will actually leave the atmosphere. In any case, very cool. And the picture is really neat. We'll link to it in your news story.
A little animated GIF.
Yeah. Animated GIF of ice going away. Thank you very much, Mr. Elam. Let's see. Who do I want to go to next? Alex, let's talk about breach notifications because it sounds so exciting.
Yeah, breach notifications.
What is that?
Well, if I guess there are a bunch of laws different states have. Not all states have them.
California has one.
California actually was the first one. It's commonly referred to as SB 1386. It's really the Senate bill reference. There's another number for the actual law.
What is it? What does it do? What's the law?
Basically says that if a company loses personally identifiable information, social security numbers, you know, there's other laws around consumer bank account numbers, but yeah, it's, you know, that sort of information. And if they happen to lose that data, they have to notify people.
If they have a potential to. I mean, even if the data could have been lost and are not really sure, even if there's no proof.
Yes, if there is reasonable suspicion that it has been released, they need to do the notifications to these people.
When these laws went into place, I worked at University of California, which I still work at, and there was a major overhaul of how we dealt with personal information. One of the things that was happening is for staff and students, the Social Security number was their identification number, so everyone had to have it. So we had to switch away from that. A different number was assigned to everybody. And additionally, anytime you had personal information, you had to basically erase personal information or only use it for certain systems. And it really made people think about how they use information. So it's been effective in that sense. And I'm not sure if we've lost information, had to notify people. But
right. Well, basically, Carnegie Mellon has done some research, and they're finding that from 2002 to 2006, these laws have been basically ineffective. There's been no measurable impact on actual identity theft. So there's been a lot of concern. I mean, there's some pros. It's raised a lot of awareness. A number of companies are actually putting efforts now to try and fix their own problems and be better at protecting the info. But they're apparently these laws are not doing very good at actually reducing the occurrences of identity theft.
So it's not effective. Okay, so how could you modify the rules so... wait a second. It seems to me that it would be effective because I've heard from you moments ago that the companies that when identification information is lost, instead of just notifying, they also offer credit card protection or credit protection plans.
Right, but the damage has been done. And I mean, this study is actually kind of focusing on whether the identity theft has actually occurred. When a breach occurs, it's fairly common. Most companies will offer credit monitoring, like 6 months to a year where there's monitoring on their account. And anytime there's a new account created, that sort of stuff is tracked the person is told about it. Unfortunately, this report also identifies that most consumers are not actually using this credit monitoring that companies have set up for them. They're just not going forward and taking
They don't sign up.
Right. They're basically given a code that they can register with, and they're just not following up with that.
Mm. Do you believe that credit, since you're a security expert, do you believe that credit protection is a good thing to have on your account? Would you recommend it?
It's a good thing. I mean, if you think you're at risk, it's hard to say. I mean, it's like insurance.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Do you really need the insurance? Depends on how rich you are, I guess. Yeah. I mean, you can watch your credit yourself periodically, really.
Right.
I mean, this is better. It's a bit more proactive, but,
sure.
You know, I always check my credit at least once a year.
Spend some money on that?
Yeah, it's a little bit. I mean, I think if you go through all credit bureaus, it's what? $30, $40, something like that.
Yeah, just make sure no one's bought a house under your name.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Alex, for that story. I think I'm going to go ahead and let's talk about your new purchase, Ben.
Yes, I just bought a folding bike.
There's a picture of you with your bike up on geekspeak.org right
currently.
Now.
Really? Yeah. Wow. You're fast.
Well, hey, you know.
You're fast. We took that like 20 minutes ago.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. Technology. Imagine that.
So what is this? So what do you mean folding bike?
It's a bike that folds in half. Well, I in particular, I have a bike that folds in two places. So the steering column actually folds in half, and the steering handlebars fold down to the front wheel. And then it also has a folding spot right in the middle of the actual bike and folds in half, and the wheels come together.
And the wheels are smaller, right? Because like
the wheels are 18 inches, mm-hmm. I think. Yeah.
Okay. And why do you get this?
I am commuting between
Stanford, where you're a teacher,
to Stanford, either from Santa Cruz. Yes, that's right. By the way, I'm teaching 9 to 13 year olds. I never knew that age range had so much energy. It's amazing. I mean, I don't ever remember being that active, but anyway.
You just remember the adults being really, really slow.
Actually, that is the way I remember it.
Yeah, amazing or just scary?
I'd say a little bit of both. Inspiring, maybe, you know? Bring out the inner child. in you. But anyway, I'm commuting. I'm staying with a friend in San Francisco, and I'm also commuting from Santa Cruz to Stanford in Palo Alto. So that means I'm either taking the Caltrain or I'm taking the 17 Express and the Caltrain, both. And the Caltrain has bike cars, and the 17 has bike racks, but only three. And so if there are three other commuters that got there before me with bikes, I can't take that bus, and, you know, I might be late.
So they let you take this on?
They'll actually let you take it on public transit, almost all public transit. And actually, it fits in the luggage racks on the Caltrain, mm-hmm. and it fits. It's just absolutely amazing.
Now, are you actually, when you get to the metro stations and to mm-hmm. get back to work, are you having to travel a bit? I mean, do you need a bike?
Yeah, in San Francisco, it's only about three blocks, but it's very, very much worth it. It's probably
three-tenths of a mile.
The Stanford campus is probably a mile and a half I have to bike to get in there. Cool. I mean, that's, you know, 20 minutes off my commute biking.
I think officially you're kind of crossing that nerd line, of course. From geek to nerd? I don't know.
I don't know. Are those really that defined?
No, they're not.
But and the one, especially one
not
other
in Ben.
No. Yeah, especially not.
If it was electrically powered, you'd still be a geek. But just a folding bike, I think that's nerdy.
Yeah,
it's so cool.
Last night I played D&D, and I don't know if that's nerdy or geeky, but
that's nerdy.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
It's got this rack on the back, and you know, maybe this is geeky. I don't know, but it's got this rack on the back, and between the three little stretchy strap things that came with the bike, and two bungee cords, I've made kind of a shock absorption
system.
For
your laptop?
For my bag and my laptop.
All right.
Yeah, so if I go over bumps, you know, it kind of...
All right, that was geek enough.
That was... Okay, so I'm a geek, yeah.
So, and you know...
I deserve to be here, right?
Thank you very much, Ben. And if you want to see Ben's really cool folding bike, what's the model? It's Dahan?
It's a Dahan D7.
Okay.
And also, without naming price, Ecology Action has an awesome program just kind of getting the bikes out there, where if you take a 2-hour bike safety class, you can get a pretty substantial rebate on these bikes. So right. that is what I did.
Cool.
Very cool.
Thank you, Ben, for telling us about your bike.
Mm-hmm. I'd recommend it for anyone who's commuting.
I'll do a quick one. I mentioned that I played D&D. The Dungeons & Dragons 4.0 version came out, I don't know, about 3 weeks ago or a month ago. And we've been playing
it. 4.0 version? Did they actually call it 4.0 version?
No, they called it version 4.
It's the fourth edition.
Yeah, but there was a 3.5 version. Like, they released version 3 books, and then they came out with version 3.5.
So it nerds trying to be geeks.
It's yeah. You know, that's a coast thing, you know.
Wannabe geeks, that's nice.
Okay. In any case, really cool rule system. One of the things that D&D 4 does is it there's a lot of rules about the characters that are used to... help other characters. So instead of just being individual, it's much more about the team play. And there are some other effects that look a lot like computer gaming. For example, every level you can actually retrain skills you've taken and take a different skill. In any case, really fun. I highly recommend it. And since... we'll go on from there. Ryder, I don't know what your news story is, so enlighten me.
Well, I thought I'd talk a little bit more about this... GPU computing trend.
Yes, CUDA is an example of that.
CUDA or CODA?
CODA is what I've
heard.
CUDA? CUDDA? I don't know.
CUDA, CODA. Anyway.
That's NVIDIA's CUDA, some acronym.
Which is basically C-compiled applications to run on NVIDIA GPUs rather than the computer CPU. One of the benefits is that you can do things incredibly fast when you leverage the GPU. And an example that came out recently on a Nantech site was talking about a third-party application that leverages the NVIDIA 8000, 9000, and their newest one that's coming out, the GT200, GT280 series, which is just a big beast of a GPU. I think it has like a billion transistors and just, you know, ungodly amount of power. The interesting thing about this application that they've compiled is that it's basically an H.264 video encoder,
mm-hmm.
which if you look at the benchmarks for what they have, it's a company called Elemental, and they have right now it's a beta trial thing, so the reviewers were only able to encode a couple of minutes of video, but if you look at the benchmarks, it was just incredibly impressive. They did best case and worst case scenarios.
Is this on the NVIDIA?
Yeah.
Using
I believe CUDA. It was on the 820.
CUDA.
And they did. It's a little fuzzy because they don't give you any options with the encoder as
right.
to
what the settings were.
But best case scenario, it was able to encode a 2 minute 264 encoding in 8 seconds.
Wow.
Versus with a quad core and Intel Core 2 Extreme,
just using the CPU.
Yeah, it was like 14 seconds. So it was like twice as fast as a quad core CPU in best case scenario, like just kind of like real crude settings,
right.
you know, defaults. And when they had it set to insane quality on that quad core CPU, it was like 71 seconds. So there's somewhere in between, you know, 8 and 71 seconds, you can now, or 17, or excuse me, 14 and 71 seconds, it can do in 8 seconds.
Yeah, that's
so,
pretty impressive.
You know, at least twice as fast. And it's really critical for this kind of encoding.
You know, it makes a lot of sense because for yeah. year, it used to be that we talk about process, we'd say, well, is it a multi, multi-thread processor or not? And that was like the discussion about it.
Mm-hmm.
And now with these graphics processors, parallel computing is really happening in one unit. And that's basically why it's so fast.
Yeah. Although interestingly, this doesn't allow you, if you had like the new 98GX2s or something that are two cards
mm-hmm.
slammed into one, it is not paralyzing across actual physical GPUs,
yeah,
but
I've
it is doing parallel processing inside the one GPU.
Sure.
And yeah, it's pretty cool that this 264, H264, X264 encoder is kind of the next generations, like the X.
You also just mentioned before the show talking about ATI's graphics cards.
Mm-hmm.
And having good performance and stuff. Do you want to address that too, since you're talking about graphics cards?
I think the 4850 and the 4870 are ATI's newest cards that they're coming out with that are going to be pretty highly competitive with the latest NVIDIA release.
And that's new for ATI.
That's new. I mean, they've kind of been trailing behind NVIDIA for a while. Price point, you know, I think you're looking for the 7850. I think it's coming in like $200,
$250,
mm-hmm. Which is. I think it's trailing just slightly behind, but price performance wise, it's doing fabulous. So,
all right.
And they have their own, of course, their own version of CUDA. I forget what it's called, but they're of course incompatible, so you wouldn't be able to use this particular application with it. But somebody
sure.
else will design it.
Sure. And then, of course, yeah. Well, we'll go
yeah.
on from there. That's pretty technical,
yeah.
and we'll thank you very much
sure.
for that, Ryder. Miles, what's going on with? Is there any way we can stop the Telecom Immunity Act?
Well, you. Talk to your senator and try to get them to vote against it.
I mean, basically, it's been in the news that it's going to pass.
Well, what's
right?
going on is you have a bill called FISA, commonly called FISA, F-I-S-A. And one of the provisions in FISA, which stands for the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, is a immunity for telecoms. The idea being that whatever the telecoms have done, we're going to give them a blanket pardon because the government asked them to do
right.
certain things that may have been questionable. And there are a lot of people, myself included, who have a major problem with this, to say if they're doing something that has a legitimate security reason behind it, then you take it to the courts. You have
right.
We have facilities for a secret court to be able to look
right.
and see. You know.
Well, I mean, the point is the telecoms that gave the information to the government broke the law in doing that.
But they were request the government
doesn't
well
matter.
It depends. There's actually some back and forth. There's
right.
some saying that the government went to go request it, and the government is also saying no, they volunteered the information, which
it,
is
it
yet another reason.
It doesn't
why.
Matter either way.
Exactly.
They should have had a warrant.
Now,
I mean, one company actually did say, give us a warrant, we'll do it. What was the telco company that did that? I can't recall.
I can't recall, but
there
was
one
also
that said
some
no and
yeah,
didn't do it basically.
Right, and there was some
and they should be rewarded for that. And these people
except that there was some evidence that they were actually punished for that.
Right.
There was actually a stock hit
yeah.
because they were expecting to get a government contract and then
they didn't.
That fell through because they weren't sure of its legality.
So the basic idea is that this FISA, there's a line in there that says the telcos that did give government information with request without a warrant will get immunity from this, any kind of lawsuit, and therefore no one can make it, you know, no one can punish them. They want
well,
no punishment.
Well, not just that, but you can't investigate it either. If there's no crime that can be investigated, then you cannot actually look to find out
okay.
what actually happened.
So the House of Representatives already passed
it. Already passed it. And,
our representative?
Our
Sam
representative,
Farr?
Sam Farr, voted against it.
Yay.
And, you know, props to him.
Props to him. So send a thank you to Sam Farr. But more importantly, what about the senators?
In February, the Senate voted on an amendment to remove telecom immunity.
Mm-hmm.
And one Senator, Barbara Boxer, voted yay to remove telecom
immunity
from the bill.
So she does not support immunity?
Right.
Okay.
So
But she'll probably still vote yes on this bill.
There's some worry about that.
Yeah.
Because it's all being lumped in. It's a choice of do you take it or leave it? Whereas Senator Feinstein voted against taking that provision out in February. So it's pretty clear where she
stands. So what you need to do in California right now, because they haven't actually – because it got delayed. The vote got delayed. Send a letter to Boxer and Feinstein and say do not – support FISA because we do not want this immunity from the telcos.
Right. It's and the reason I brought up the reason what it stood for, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, is the fact that it's been found that the telecoms have made have done domestic spying, that it's been conversations from one U.S. citizen to another U.S. citizen on U.S. soil,
right?
Not just communications from U.S. citizens to outside or outside communications that have passed through the U.S. networks.
Right.
So to say it's Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act isn't necessarily an accurate.
So what you're saying is change it, make immunity for foreign for lawsuits for foreign domestic foreign spying. That's okay. We don't care. It's the domestic that we have an issue with. But we don't want them to have a
moral. I have an issue with both of them because it takes away accountability. But I definitely have an issue with being able to spy on Americans with on U.S. soil without any due process of law available.
Right. Right. Well, thank you very much, Miles, for that. I normally, I don't know how often we take political stands, but I would say this is one where I feel strongly that, and I've already
and it touches a geeky topic. It touches, and we've covered this before, how it talks about telecom and that infrastructure in there, and a lot of people don't think of the consequences of it because it is of a technical nature.
Yep. And so, do we have the links up to the senator's contact information up on the website?
Not as yet.
I will momentarily. Thank you very much for that. I appreciate it. We're going to be taking calls in a few minutes. Let's see if we can fit one more thing. Ben, art projects with snails?
Yeah, I'd love to talk about this.
Oh, so, wait, you have a news story like that?
I do.
I just was saying that.
Wow.
Go on.
Wow. So I want to talk about snail mail, but literal snail mail, like snails delivering mail. There's an art installation called Real Snail Mail at – I'm going to – butcher this pronunciation, but Bournemouth University, is that right? Bournemouth mouth? In the UK.
Bournemouth,
okay. Anyway, so it kind of takes your normal message sending and introduces a new node, if you will. So when you send a message through their service, it travels through traditional means and it gets to this tank, which has snails in it. And the snails have RFID tags on them. And so whenever the snails pass by the first reader, it attaches the message onto one of the snail's RFIDs, and the snail, you know, meanders around the tank for a couple more days and eventually goes within an inch of the other reader, which, you know, grabs the message, sends it off to its final destination. Through normal means at the speed of light, right? Or more or less.
Electronics.
Yeah, whatever. Anyway, so it's pretty ridiculous.
It's art,
and
man.
The fastest. Okay, there are three snails in this tank, right?
the postal carrier.
Do you want to guess what the of the fastest snail has delivered? I think 14 messages or just something.
You know,
between 10 and 20 messages.
Another one.
Anyone want to wager a guess as to what the average delivery time is?
A day.
1.96 days.
Okay,
that's the fastest. That's the fastest one. One of the snails has not managed to deliver one message.
Did he die?
Successfully.
He's
fired. Just chilling in his corner or something.
There's a great metaphor here if this became popular enough.
Yeah.
The idea of, we have to speed up email delivery. We need to add some kind of adrenaline to the tank so we can speed up. Like, that's the kind of patchwork you see sometimes in systems. Uh-huh. Like, that's really slow. We better speed that up.
Yeah, that's a good metaphor. And actually, Paul Smith, who's one of the visual artists working on this project, says, quote, "One thing technology promises us is speed, acceleration, more of everything in less time. Culturally, we seemed obsessed with immediacy. Time is not to be taken, but crammed to a bursting point. And they hope that this project will encourage people to take their time and contemplate the technology and the work and, you know, just,
thank you.
You know, chill out.
If you'd like to contemplate the technology, feel free to call us up with questions and comments about technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, use the internet. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us or participate in our forums, which we actually do, thanks to Alex. GeekSpeak on KOSP, supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley, offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, Notary Public, and more. Information online at businesswithpleasure.com. We are taking your calls with questions and comments about technology. This is GeekSpeak. My name's Lyle Troxell. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. In the air room with me, Miles Elam, Ben Jaffe, Ryder Brooks, and Alex Leas. And Rick Philman is on the phones waiting to pipe you into the air room. So if you've got questions and comments about technology, please give us a call, 476-2800. Again, that's 476-2800, or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. Stay with KUSP for Castle Cottage this morning at 11 a.m. That's a half an hour from now on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. Well, while we wait for calls, let's go ahead and do a next news story. Who looks up? Ryder, go for it.
Sure. We haven't talked about the new cell phone ban yet, have we?
I don't think so.
Okay. So as of Tuesday, July 1st, California will be banning using your cell phone without unless you have heads-free, hands-free communications with it. So a Bluetooth headset or a speakerphone in your car. They will be imposing $20 fines for anybody caught talking with their cell phone, holding up to their hand. Police, Highway Patrol police can pull you over specifically just for that.
Mm-hmm.
Only $20, though. I'm a little disappointed. I would personally have hoped for $50 or $100 as a real deterrent incentive for that kind of behavior. But interestingly enough, we were joking about this before the show that it does not ban text messaging use, either reading or writing, or browsing the web on your cell phone. It is only for talking on your phone.
Is it a – so you can text message still?
Yes.
That's even more dangerous.
Unless you are a novice driver, so presumably 16 to 18 or haven't had your license for very long, it does ban all cell phone use.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess the question I have is, I've lost my train of thought. Alex, do you have something to say on this?
I just find the whole law, to be rather amusing. I mean, there's been studies also that say that, there is no discernible difference between using your phone and your up against your head versus right. having the hands free.
Right.
It's the conversation itself that's supposed to be the distraction. So, and then you got text messaging, which to me should be the first thing to go out. But,
exactly.
People have been talking on their phone longer, so it's had more momentum.
Yeah, there have been. It's relatively unpopular. I mean, in terms of actual banning of this type, there's only three or four states in the country that actually do it.
Is this a moving violation that affects your insurance?
I don't know. Hmm. That has not been covered.
Google.
I would imagine, given the minor fine on it, that probably not. But
because that would be enough of a deterrent right there. Even if
if you got a point or a half point for
absolutely.
Doing that. Although interesting that you can actually get pulled over specifically for that can cause problems if you have other violations like you're not wearing your seatbelt.
Or your tags expired.
Or your license
expired.
Or you're smuggling pounds of marijuana.
Right. Miles. And I'm just kidding. All right. I had to pick on somebody. I've known Miles longer than anybody else. Thank you very much for that update. So make sure not to use your phone in your car. And if you have hands-free, use that while you're walking on the beach.
And GeekSpeak, we definitely discourage people from actually calling on their cell phone in any form or capacity.
Cell phone's fine, but
yeah, but pull over first.
Yes. Yeah. Pull over and wait by the side of the road, listening patient to us ramble on about technology. And speaking, listening to us patiently, let's go ahead and take a call from Larry. Larry, are you in your car driving?
No, I am not.
Oh, good. Larry from San Jose, what can we help you with?
Well, a couple problems that. The last one that I encountered is trying to get type in an email question on your show, and as I open up the window for Contact Us on GeekSpeak, I get these, I don't know if they're called tabs, they're kind of like pop-ups that are in front of the screen.
I know what you're talking about. Oh, yes. Yeah, you called before the show, and I was like, I checked on it. So you're using Internet Explorer 5, I believe, on a Windows machine. Because there is a rendering bug in my code on the GeekSpeak website that causes exactly what you're seeing.
Okay.
So it is all me, and I'm so sorry.
That's okay. Okay. Well, what my question was, actually I have a number of them now because someone was saying I should try using the Firefox.
Firefox will totally remove that problem.
Now, I don't know how I would go in and change my browser, but anyway.
Yeah, it's fine.
The question that I have is someone resurrected an old Mac G4 for my daughter to use, and it's in her bedroom, and she wants to be able to get on the Internet. And I told her, we have the wireless device, and it sure would be nice rather than, tapping into the phone line
And just out of curiosity, is this a laptop or a desktop machine?
It's a desktop. It's
okay.
An old G4.
So
yeah.
G4, depending, is it does it have a little silver eye on the front like it's watching you?
Boy, offhand, I'm not sure okay. because I actually took it somewhere last night to see.
There's a few different versions of the G4, but what you want to do is go ahead and is it running OS 10?
I think it's 10.2, and I bought a device at Fry's that said it would hook us up to our wireless.
Yeah, but did it say Macintosh?
Yes.
It did.
It said it required at least 10.3 or better. So we returned that. I went down and I talked to the salesperson.
Did you try it first before you returned it?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Normally that kind of stuff will probably work. But what I would do is most likely that machine is actually wireless ready, which means it's got an antenna in it and it's got a PC card internal slot that you can put the card in.
Okay, we're talking at least 8 years old, probably.
Yeah, still, G4s, I think, had this. I would be surprised if it didn't.
It depends. I mean, I remember the earliest models didn't, but they shortly started having the slot so you could, but that's a few years into
the G4s. So what you can do is you can identify this pretty easily by going on to Apple's site and find the model number and actually seeing what specs of it are. But in any case, that the wireless solution you got would probably work for it.
There's a couple alternatives. I've done this for my little sister. She's got a G3.
Mm-hmm.
And what I ended up going with was finding a USB wireless adapter. You just plug into the back, and it was good to go. Alternatively, you can also get some wireless bridge. I haven't been able to find them in stores.
I have a lot of trouble with wireless bridges. The software never seems to work as well as you want it to. And then it loses its connection. You need to go through the web interface to
touch it. Well, I treat it like a router. I mean, I have one in my living room, and I have it hooked up with a switch, so I actually could put all my devices in my living room.
What
so
make
they connect.
Is it?
Would
it's
that
Alexis.
Be like a... They, at Fry's, they told me also to that I could probably buy this wireless gaming device and use it as a bridge.
It depends on what that is.
It really depends on what it is. I mean, it might work, but... For me, a wireless bridge is really... It's a good generic use. You can use it for almost any computer, you know, as long as it has can plug into a physical network.
What Alex is talking about is a small device that has at least one Ethernet port on it and a wireless antenna. And so you have an existing wireless network, and you plug this thing within its range. And then when you plug it in the PC to the jack, the Ethernet jack, you then can access a website, which is actually that device, and you can set it up to attach to your home network. And so it's actually bridging, that's what it's called, a bridge. It's bridging your wireless point to another Ethernet point jack. And it's a cool way to deal with spanning distances. In fact, if you had a whole bunch of neighbors and you all participated in this, you could have one Internet connection shared with a whole bunch of bridges. But I've had trouble with bridges before. That's why I asked if it was a Linksys or not, if it's a new one. I did buy one recently, and I think it's a Linksys as well, that used it for an art show. And it was working, but it did drop out, and... You had to repower it quite a bit.
Yeah, mine's not new. It's old, but I do have Linksys on both ends.
Yeah,
so.
But I think if you're running OS 10, even OS 10.2, getting a USB Wi-Fi adapter is probably the easiest thing to do because it's going to just work right off the bat.
I'd be wary of some of them. The one that I've set up, it uses its own software. It's not recognized as a network device readily. So it has a little extra driver. It's kind of tweaky, and I just personally don't like it. I would rather have gone with a bridge, which is a bit more seamless.
Okay, good to know. Well,
right.
Larry, thank you very much for the call.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
We are taking calls with questions and comments of technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You are welcome to go to geekspeak.org, click on, forums or contact us and participate that way. A regular caller, I would say, almost a regular caller from Watsonville. Judith, welcome to Geekspeak.
Hi. I'm calling. I recently I upgraded from dial-up to a wireless internet. It's not the satellite, but it's from a base station somewhere on the ground. And I when they came, it was sort of like, I'm not sure, are we going to get a signal here? Well, they set it up. I have to have an outside antenna to get the signal.
Right.
But it sort of cuts in and out, and they came and they replaced the modem, and then they came and they replaced something else the other day. But after the first time, it was working somewhat better, but it would still cut in and out a bit. After the second time, like yesterday, it wasn't working at all.
Did you have to repower?
They fixed it.
Did they suggest you repower anything?
What?
Did they suggest that you unplug something and plug it back in?
I've done that multiple times.
And does that work all the time or not?
No.
Okay.
No, it sometimes it helps and.
Do you know?
Sometimes it doesn't.
Is your antenna mounted on something stationary?
On the bridge of my house.
And is it an antenna or a satellite dish?
It's like, it's not a satellite dish. It's maybe a microwave antenna type thing or something.
Does it have a parabolic reflector?
It doesn't look like the dish TV ones, but it's more like wires that are in a sort of a parabolic shape, I guess.
Huh, interesting.
And they said they've never had this problem. But then today it's working. It seems to be working just fine. And so I'm trying to figure out, oh.
Okay, so if they've never had the problem, then they need to replace equipment for you. It's probably nothing you're doing.
They're saying they've replaced the equipment, and then it's still going in and out.
Did they rewire the antenna?
They didn't put a whole completely new wire in.
Okay, so that could be the problem. I mean, I'm just saying that if they're an ISP that actually does a lot of this kind of thing, and they're seeing something completely unique with you,
uh-huh.
almost certainly it's the software that's installed or the hardware. And
yeah.
if they've replaced some of the hardware and it keeps happening, tell them, it's still happening, you need to handle this, you're in breach of the contract we have.
Yeah, they said the other thing, they said you can just have all my money back. I mean, that they have a one-month money-back guarantee.
They want to get your money back to you?
Yeah.
And you're not in DSL range, right?
No, I can't get DSL, yeah. And satellite's way too expensive.
What's the name of the company?
I'm hesitant to say it over the air.
Why, because you don't want to advertise them?
Well, no, I think they're very good. Razzolink is the name of the company.
Razzolink.
They're in Salinas, and I'm in Watsonville, so I'm on the outer limit of their... Salinas in that area.
Yeah.
I think it's for people, because there's a lot of us out here in ag land that...
Yeah.
You know, so that's what they and I think I've heard very good things about it. My close neighbor has it and loves it, and mm-hmm. it's working just fine for him. And one of the things I'm wondering is I live in the middle of right now. They're putting up hoops over the raspberry fields. Are you familiar with how that
is? That metal?
It's metal.
Interesting.
Would that interfere?
Yeah, I mean that could change the landscape of the RF pretty well, but it shouldn't be.
But I don't know whether if they put it up higher, whether it might. Whether that might help it get better.
Well, higher is pretty much always better for terrestrial stuff because you're really trying to avoid any break in the signal.
Yeah.
And so if there's a few valleys in between you and those things are being covered with metal, yeah, that could break down the signal a bit. But it's much more likely to be something kind of active. Though, yeah. So I don't know. I think the reason I asked for the name is I've wanted to talk to a company that does this kind of work before and have them on the show and everything. We could talk to them and that kind of focus, and I could bring you up. They'd probably focus on you a little bit more.
Yeah, I think they're very good. I mean, I've heard very good things about them. And, you know, they're willing, you know, they're going to give me all my money back if I quit with them.
You know, tell them, you know, please don't get my money back. We really want to fix
this. I really want to be a long-term happy customer of yours.
One thing you could do is go, you know, can we try a different cable? Maybe the cable's bad or maybe the connections are bad. Can you? Because what you could do is just ask them for a long cable to be plugged in and just lay on the ground and plug in directly. So you're kind of bypassing the one that put up neat and see if it keeps happening. And at least that way, you know, and it won't take a lot of work to do that.
Just to put in a long cable.
Just put in a long cable that doesn't go neat, goes through a window. You know, they don't have to install the whole thing. They just kind of put in a temporary thing and see if the problem still arises. And if the problem still arises, you know that's not the cable. So you're kind of troubleshooting without asking them to do a lot of work. In fact, just say, you know, can I come by your office? You can give me a long cable and I'll do it. I mean, try to work with them a little bit and see. And that'd be my recommendation to you.
The other thing I was wondering about, it's sort of related to, I think, maybe what you were talking about with the other guy, is my fairly close neighbor has it. And he said... You know, if we could somehow get it so I could use his.
How close a neighbor?
Well, the house, their internet is in the other end of the house, but the house itself is maybe 10-30 feet from my house.
Yeah, you're gonna run in right there into having your own wireless thing that you have to fix and break. And I
don't know whether – I don't even know whether that's sort of possibly doable.
Let me put it this way. I'm hesitant to do it even though my aunt lives across the street and is relatively close. So if I'm hesitant to do it just because of the investment and whether it will be stable or not, I think you might want to be hesitant too. I did do this when I lived right next to my parents a few years ago.
Uh-huh.
And our houses were about that same distance, and – I finally ended up, after buying some hardware and spending a couple $100s, I finally ended up running an Ethernet cable between the two houses because I happened to have the ability to do that. And it wasn't pretty or anything, but it worked. So, though maybe Alex is saying that they're better at this point. That was a few years ago.
No, I wasn't. I was going to say you probably end up having to look at some sort of specialized directional antenna You know, I mean, a friend of mine, we're actually looking at that just to have high-speed gaming between us. But
yeah, stay with Razolink. Just really
yeah,
get them
I think I can send you. I'll send you their link to their site if you're interested.
Yeah, yeah, please do.
I'll go on to your website.
Yeah, don't use Internet Explorer 5, please.
What?
nothing. You're fine. Yeah, that would be great if we could get a link from you. Thank you.
Firefox. I was on the download day.
Oh, cool. Did you hear that about from us?
Did they win? Do you know?
Did we win? Yeah, we'll do that right now.
I believe they did because there was no previous mark.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But they did definitely beat their expectations.
We're talking about Firefox had a world record attempt and succeeded in their downloads of Firefox 3, which we actually have some news on, so we'll go into that. Thank you very much, Judith, for the call.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So what's going on with Firefox 3? Who had that news story?
I had the news story.
Okay,
hold on.
Didn't have it up.
Oh, here it is. Okay. So Firefox 3 adoption is huge. And I have some numbers from this particular website. This is not by any means entirely valid study or anything. But pcpro.co.uk, we're looking at their logs and found that after 10 days of Firefox 3 being officially released, right now, 55% of the users using Firefox are using 3. And then 40% are using 2, some version of 2.
So we're saying within a very short period of time, the people who were using Firefox before, or
using Firefox 2,
enough people made it such that Firefox 3 is more used than any other Firefox versions combined.
Exactly.
That's pretty big. And what about like Internet Explorer?
Yeah, for comparison, actually, Internet Explorer, currently 7, which is the new version, is 69%, and Internet Explorer 6 is 31%, and they've been out for over 18 months.
Interesting.
And so, so
Firefox is doing well. But then again, it makes sense because the people that have installed Firefox were told, hey, Firefox is better. They're slightly technical enough to do that, and therefore the fear of doing a new browser wouldn't be that big of a hindrance.
And also, it should be said that this is pcpro.co.uk, so this is probably a different...
It's a Windows environment.
Exactly. It's people who go to that website.
Right.
You know, so maybe if you were to look at a global users of the internet kind of study, or just people who have installed, which is a lot harder to measure, you'd find different numbers. So this might be slightly inflated numbers.
Right.
But
what about bearded dragons? People that dragons.
I'll have to look at my logs and
Alex,
see what that's like.
Alex is one of his hobbies as being a geek is interest in bearded dragons. Those are like the little pretty dragons that you can have, little lizards you can have. Are they iguanas, technically, or are they lizards?
No, they're a lizards. Whole different type of... iguana is just a lizard, but they're a whole different type of lizard.
Yeah, they're pretty cool looking. In any case, he runs one of the most popular forums about bearded dragons. So if you've got a bearded dragon, you probably know Alex. The forum website is?
Beardeddragon.org.
Beardeddragon.org. That's right, there was a whole fight about domain names. Okay, let's go ahead and take another call from San Diego. Sam, welcome to GeekSpeak. Can you speak up, Sam? I can barely hear you, which means most people can't.
I was wondering about hands-free cell phones.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So on July 1st, people are going to have to buy, a bunch of hands-free cell phones and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And if I drive, then I don't really want to buy something. So do you think I could get away with maybe strapping my cell phone to my head with a rubber band or something?
No.
No,
I don't think so, because the phone can't be connected to, can't be up to your ear, I would say.
Oh.
And I guess you could look at the law and see.
Yeah, I'm wondering
legally,
is it, you have to have both your hands on the wheel, or, have both hands able to be on the wheel? Or
I would say that wouldn't be as safe, right?
You're going to have to interact with the phone, push a button.
Oh, yeah, you will touch it.
You
have to push a button on the wire.
I think you've got a funny news story.
Yeah. I would imagine that would come to the discretion of the officer pulling you over, which you'll most likely get pulled over at least.
What if you set up a helmet with a little switch on it, so when you put the helmet on top of your head, it would hit a button which would activate your cell phone?
I think you could sell that for $50.
I mean, I wonder how legal that would be.
Why not buy the hands-free item?
Just money.
I guess we lost you. Hello, are you there?
Oh,
Sam, why not just buy some kind of hands-free cable? Because you don't have to have a Bluetooth. You can just buy a cable that has a earbud and a mic on it.
Oh, well, I'm just thinking I don't really want to go out and buy
do that, yeah. All right.
That's a geeky way to address the situation.
I think it's a good – you could make a hands-free device that wouldn't be that, so – You could also like open up your cell phone, take the speaker line out of it and the mic line, run it along extension cable.
Well, I found a pinout for my cell phone. Yeah. I was thinking about doing that. And then I was talking to you about it, and you were like, just Ben, just like spend $5, you know? Come on.
Get the cable. Yeah. Sam, good luck.
Yeah. Yeah, I can flesh out a little bit of questions that you had before about that. You do get a point on your record. I'm sorry. You do not get a point on your record, but it is permanently listed in your record. But there's no point associated with it. $20 for the first fine, $50 subsequent fines.
Okay.
So they're rolling in
slowly.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Sam, for calling, and good luck with hacking away your phone. All right, we're going to go ahead and take another call, this time from Santa Cruz, John. Oh, John hung up, I guess. All right. Well, how about Big Sir? I like talking to Big Sir. Harmony, welcome to Big Sir. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, how's it going?
Quite well. What's your question?
I would like to learn how to connect my computer to my work computer so that I can see what's going on.
So from home, be able to connect up to work?
Yeah.
So you don't have to go to work as much?
Yeah.
Where do you work?
We have a business in Marina.
Okay, so you're driving from Big Sur to Marina to do any kind of work. Well, there's a few different things. There's a thing called Connect to My PC, which I've heard about and never tried.
Well, number one, does your business have an internet connection?
Yeah, business.
Okay, just making sure.
Does your business have electricity?
It's got all that good stuff.
Are you on a Windows or PC at the business and at home?
PCs
on both places. Yeah. All right, there's an application called PC Anywhere. There's a service called Connect to My PC. And then are you just wanting to connect to the computer completely, or do you want to actually, like, just check your email and stuff?
No, I want to connect to it.
Okay. Go ahead and try out Go to My PC. But if it's a business that has an IT guy person at all, make sure to talk to them about it, because depending on how the business is set up, its security and everything, this could be extremely difficult or really simple. And if it's really simple, then you should be concerned to some degree, because that means it's probably kind of simple for people to hack in.
All right.
But in any case, Connect to My PC is a pretty cool application. What you're doing is you're running an application on the work machine, and it's connecting up to a service, and then you use a web browser to view the computer and interact with it. And I've heard a lot about it because I listened to Grammar Girl, which is one of the podcasts I listen to, and she was being underwritten by Connect to My PC before. So I've heard about it in that way, but I've never used it. Anybody else here use it? Anybody else have any more recommendations?
Actually, I was wondering,
Miles Elam. He's got a full beard. Go on.
Your computer at work, is it a desktop PC, or do you have a laptop?
The one at work is a desktop.
Okay.
Pretty new. I just didn't know if they had anything in them that just let you do it.
In the past, when I've worked, I've had a laptop. I've taken it home and used what's called a VPN, virtual private network, so that my home computer ends up being my work computer. There isn't any distinction there.
I've seen that that thing, VPN, somewhere in my computer.
Yeah. VPN is really, it's a way to make
a virtual private network is what it stands for.
It's a remote network connection to an internal network that makes you kind of an extended part of that internal network. And it's a security thing. And if it's not enabled to your business, you don't really have to worry about that aspect. But if it is, that's one of the complications that would arise. So I'd go ahead and try an application like that. On a Macintosh Leopard, I believe, there's screen sharing and it's kind of built in. And you can do that kind of thing kind of out of the box. But
that's different than the Connect to My PC.
Yeah, Connect to My PC is an application, a service you have to actually buy.
Well, Lyle, are you talking about Connect to My PC or Go to My PC?
Go to My PC. I've been saying it wrong the whole time. Thank you very much.
No, you can do stuff equivalent on the Mac, on the PC. It's VNC, Virtual Network Computing.
Yeah, I completely forgot about that.
Oh, yeah, VNC.
Basically, you install a server software, and it's free. There's a couple of them out there. There's one called Real VNC.
We'll put links up to the.
Yeah, but you can download those free softwares, install them as a server component on your work machine, and provided you've got the cooperation with your IT guys at work to have some port open so you can communicate with your work PC on that network channel. You can, with a client software on your home machine, connect to it. You can set up a password and then get a remote display of your desktop that way.
So VNC, Real VNC, and what was the other one you suggested?
Tight VNC. And I'd probably recommend Tight VNC over Real VNC. It's more open source and more features.
Okay, so there you go. Yeah. Tight VNC is what you want to look into. And probably in their help and facts, they're going to talk about the ports you need to open on the routers, and that's part of the issues of security.
Yeah, I mean, also, do you have an IT staff that manages your network, or do you have like a simple DSL connection for work?
Yeah, pretty simple.
Okay, because that means that the machine, if it's not locked down behind a firewall, I mean, there may be some complexity. Do you have an IT staff or anybody who helps you set up those systems at work?
Not yet.
Okay, because if it's hooked up directly to DSL, it could be just exposed out there. It depends if you have an internet router.
You might be in a really bad situation.
Yeah, you might already be in a bad situation. But a lot of the solutions like type VNC or using VNC or even remote desktop or desktop sharing with the Mac. Is that your machine is directly exposed to the system or to the internet, and that could be a bad thing, whereas solutions like GoToMyPC actually have kind of an intermediary. It doesn't necessarily require your system to be open to the network like that.
Thank you, Harmony, for the call.
Thank you.
Good luck. And, of course, you're welcome. Anyone has extra questions like that, you're welcome to go to the forums, and we'll help out at that place. That's Geekspeak.org. Click on the forums. Geekspeak is a registered service mark of online tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. Geekspeak is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics offering extensive selection of computer electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com.
Thanks to all of you who made contributions, we raised the necessary funds to buy an emergency generator for KUSP. Almost 100 listeners responded to the need with a donation to the generator fund. Before the winter storms arrive, we will have a generator installed. So, if the electricity goes off, KUSP will stay on.
The geeks this morning were Miles Elam, Ryder Brooks, Ben Jaffe, and Alex Leas from down south. Thank you very much for coming up here. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you, Lyle.
I'm Lyle Troxell. Answering the phones was Rick Philman for KUSP and GeekSpeak. I'm Lyle Troxell. See you next week.
You just listened to another episode of GeekSpeak via our podcast. Would you do us a favor? Please go to your favorite podcasting index site, whether it be iTunes, Dig.com, Odeo, or another site, and write a review or give us a vote to let others know what you think about GeekSpeak. Thanks, that'd really help us out. GeekSpeak is supported by PreownedCar.com, PreownedCar.com, where anyone can post their vehicle for sale or browse to purchase a pre-owned car from other car owners. More information available at PreownedCar.com. This is Lyle Troxell for KUSP. Thanks for listening.